Farms versus the Village of Washington Park. Counsel, you can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel. This case presents two important First Amendment issues which have been fully resolved by the last year's Supreme Court case of Alameda. And those two issues are, number one, whether a city or a village can reduce the problem of secondary effects of adult speech by simply reducing speech, reducing the amount of speech. And Alameda unequivocally says that is forbidden. The second issue is whether or not the city or any city can use the adult entertainment businesses as a revenue enhancer or allow the privilege of engaging in an adult entertainment business to be a source of revenue for the city, and Alameda says absolutely not. There are other issues in this case that about the arbitrariness of what the city, or what the village in this case did, which really don't need to be addressed because the primary issues are unequivocally, the principles are unequivocally announced by Alameda. On the first issue, Alameda says, in Justice Kennedy's opinion, which, as this court indicated in Ben's Bar, is the controlling portion of Alameda, he said, the city may not regulate the secondary effects of speech by suppressing speech itself. It is no trick to reduce secondary effects by reducing speech or its audience, but a city may not attack secondary effects indirectly by attacking speech. He again says later in the opinion, it is true that cutting speech in half would probably reduce secondary effects proportionately, but again, a promised proportional reduction does not suffice. Though the inference is maybe inexorable that a city could reduce secondary effects by reducing speech, this is not a permissible strategy.
Well, Mr. Furman, if I may interrupt you there for a minute. Suppose this municipality had used one of the more conventional ways of attempting to limit the number of establishments within its borders by zoning and saying how many, where they could be in the geography of the town, or how many feet they could be from each other, or whatever. Wouldn't the city be, in effect, limiting speech as well? Because as a practical matter, they would limit the number of outlets for the speech. They would go about it in a different way. Well, in other words, are you really arguing for something that's a difference in appearance but not in substance?
No, there is a substantive difference between those two arguments.
I'd appreciate your elaborating on that.
The first is, both Alameda and Ben's Bar and this circuit and Schultz and Renton all address the question of where is the ordinance aimed? What is the purpose of the ordinance? If the purpose of the ordinance is to directly address the secondary effects, to regulate the secondary effects by placement, by hours of operation, by whether or not they can serve alcohol, and the incidental effect is a reduction of speech, then under O'Brien, that's allowable because it's clear that the First Amendment is not an absolute, but that under O'Brien and its progeny, regulations that are directed at non-speech elements are allowable even though they have a speech effect. And this is what the village in this particular case is arguing. However, in Schultz, this court made it very clear that even when a city is actuated by a secondary effects motive, the government may not ban speech. Although, and they said in Schultz, the ordinance restrictions on nude dancing were not incidental byproducts from content-neutral regulation of a larger inclusive class of non-expressive conduct. They were, in fact, direct regulations of speech. Here, in this case, this is exactly what they've done. They've aimed at not where you can do it, or who can do it, or what times you can do it. They've aimed at the amount of speech that they determined to be allowable, and that is not allowable under the First Amendment. We might as well, if you're going to allow that, you might as well allow an ordinance that says we only allow one newspaper in the city, because the secondary effects of having too many newspapers, we have trash and all fights that break out because of differing opinions, things like that. That's what they're attempting to do here, is they're attempting to say, we've arbitrarily decided how much speech we're going to have in this city, and we've cut it off at this level. And then they've gone on, and they have a back door, they have a trap door. But when somebody comes along that they like, they jump up the number and allow a couple of people to straggle in. It happened at the meeting that's cited in the brief. There were three applicants for a license. My client was the first dated applicant.
Was this contended in the district court?
Yes, sir.
Argument?
Yes, sir. That was there was a transcript of the meeting that was made a part of, attached to the record and made a part of the evidence. The city, you can read the transcript for yourself, and it's cited in the brief. Mr. Joyner showed up and said, "I'm here for my license," and they said, "At this moment, Mr. Joyner, we make an emergency motion to amend the ordinance." And grant 6 licenses instead of 4, but I'm sorry, Mr. Joyner, we've decided to give them to these 2 other guys who came in after you, and now there's no license left for you.
Now, so would you explain why Washington Park seems to be a mecca for adult entertainment?
Your Honor, the judge declared that the Washington Park was the entertainment capital of the east part of the St. Louis area. I don't know why. Historically, I suppose it has a reputation somewhat akin to Cicero. And I don't claim to be any student of the history of Washington Park. But it's clear and I said to the trial court judge in this case, there are so many things they can do if they are really concerned about being overrun by strip clubs or by adult video stores. They can do all of the things that Renton and Alameda and all of their progeny, Schultz, Ben's Bar, any of those cases, by proximity zoning, by alcohol regulation, by hours of operation. But what they cannot do is arbitrarily cut off the number of permissible licenses. Now, the city or the village in this case tries to make a distinction between saying that they are content neutral. This is just a content-neutral regulation because they've only cut off the number of speakers. They've not interfered with what those licensed speakers could say. That doesn't cut the mustard with the Constitution. The Constitution says the government is prohibited from abridging the freedom of speech, and reducing the number of speakers arbitrarily is the same as reducing what they can say. There is no distinction whatsoever.
Are you making an argument with regard to the amount of the license fee?
Yes, sir. The amount of the license fee, well, first of all, Alameda addresses that directly. Alameda says, Kennedy says, a city may not impose a content-based fee or tax. Official scrutiny of the content of the speech as the basis for imposing a tax is entirely incompatible with the First Amendment. This is true even if the government purports to justify the fee by reference to secondary effects. He cites Forsyth County. You also have Schultz, which says more or less the same thing. There are courts in the 11th Circuit that really flesh this out much better. And if I could just read it.
Doesn't that relate only to the fee?
That relates to the fee, yes, sir.
Only.
Not to the number of them. There are 2 separate issues here.
Right, right.
2 things
right.
They tried to do, and neither of which they can do. They can't limit the number of them, and they can't. The fee that they have imposed here is $30,000 for a cabaret, yearly cabaret, only a cabaret for adult entertainment. You could have a cabaret of nightclub singer, and there is no fee for that. So if you have non-adult entertainment, there is no tax, no fee. But if you're going to have adult entertainment, it's $30,000. The same for a bookstore. If you have a bookstore that sells, we had a Barnes & Noble in Washington Park. You have to know Washington Park to find that amusing. But if there was a Barnes & Noble in Washington Park, there would be no fee no license fee at all, but if they have a video store and a bookstore that sells adult material, that's $10,000 a year. There's no effort by the village to show the administrative cost of administering these businesses, and even though they try and say we need it for police, we need it for roads, it's clear under the 11th Circuit case, South Suburban Housing, another case that some of you are familiar with, license fees must be revenue neutral when they affect First Amendment activity. And the 11th Circuit in Sentinel Communications went even further and said that the First Amendment prohibits the village or a city from raising revenue under the guise of defraying its administrative costs, and that's what the village is doing at this point. And if it's okay with the court, if you don't have any further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, we are here today on behalf of the Village of Washington Park to defend the refusal of Judge Murphy to grant a preliminary injunction in this case. The issues that Mr. Herman cited, we believe, are important issues in the case, the first being the limit on the number of licenses. I think Judge Ripple hit it on the head in his question to Mr. Herman that what Washington Park has done, which apparently has not been done in any other case that we could find, is to limit the number of adult entertainment licenses, adult cabaret licenses. And I suppose it is, in a sense, the ultimate time, place, and manner restriction. We disagree with the plaintiffs that it's content, that it is directed to content. It is content neutral. It's no coincidence that Judge Murphy made the statement that Washington Park is the adult entertainment capital of Metro East. And by saying that, what he means is that there are more than sufficient avenues of communication for topless dancing, nude dancing, in this village of 5,400 people. The ordinance itself recognizes the basis on which the village capped the number of licenses. There's a laundry list of factors that the ordinance takes into account in Section 1, which I think demonstrates that this was not something done without a consideration, or with a consideration that had anything to do with content. What the village has done has said, at this point in time, 6 adult entertainment licenses in a village of 5,400 people is enough. And it is the functional equivalent of some of the other indirect methods that municipalities use, such as zoning or liquor control. And we believe that it meets the Supreme Court's test and this court's test for content neutrality. When that is the case, then of course the intermediate level of scrutiny applies, and under this case decision of Ben's Bar, this court said the level of scrutiny depends on the purpose of the enactment of the ordinance. And the purpose of the enactment of this ordinance clearly is to regulate the secondary effects. Section 1 of the ordinance.
Even if we accept that, $30,000 fee, how does that fit in?
Well, our position on the fee, Your Honor, is this. That the fee, in the application of the cases that seem to apply, Murdoch, Cox, South Suburban, the courts seem to say that if the fee is calculated to defray the cost of protecting from the evil that the fee is in a sense licensing, that $30,000 for these clubs might be on the high side of reasonable. But considering the cost of the secondary effects of these clubs in a small village of 5,400 people, it's the village's position that this does defray the cost of the things cited in the ordinance. And I'm not saying that the fee is necessarily related. Well, I think I am saying that the fee is related.
How can you justify $30,000 fee? A jump from 10 to 30.
In the testimony by the mayor in the court below, he explained it by saying that with this number of clubs, at the time the 10,000 fee was in effect, I think the cap was 4. And they were finding that given the requirements for police protection generated by these clubs, that it was insufficient to defray the costs of administering the program, if you will, of governing these clubs.
What kind of evidence is there in the district court's records to support that?
Well, that, as the court knows from looking at the transcript, the mayor testified that there were studies about the number of police calls, et cetera, but unfortunately neither the mayor nor the clerk could locate those studies.
Yeah, but and how many police officers would they have to pay $50,000 to justify increasing it to $30,000 or $50,000?
We had 9 full-time officers and 10 part-time. They
are assigned to this type of operation.
They're not assigned directly to patrolling the clubs. That's part of their duties, and in fact, as you can see from the mayor's testimony, they spend a lot of time doing that. And it was the board's judgment that a $30,000 fee would be appropriate and reasonable, and in fact Judge Murphy found it was rationally related to trying to control the secondary effects, and that's our argument, that even though it does seem high and compared to other cases that have fees that are much lower, including the case we cited that upheld a $1,200 fee, we're in a unique situation.
I'd say you are.
And in the context of a preliminary injunction hearing, of course, since we didn't have a full-blown trial on the merits, and this was not a determination on the merits, we expect to be able to prove in the trial of the cause that there is with better facts than we had at the preliminary injunction hearing, that there is a relationship between the $30,000 fee and the administration of controlling the secondary effects of having these clubs in this small.
Are there other licensing fees, for example, for establishments that serve alcoholic beverages?
There's a $3,000 fee for liquor license for a club. The general business licenses are $300. And I would take issue with something Mr. Herman said. If Barnes & Noble came into Washington Park, which would be wonderful, and they had material that came under the definition of businesses selling adult entertainment books, magazines, and other reading materials, they would have to pay a $10,000 fee. So I don't think that there's discrimination in that sense. But our position is that, and that's why I think this is one of the cases that this court decided, it might have been the Schultz case, that came up on summary judgment. And the court was satisfied that, at least at a summary judgment stage, and I think that's even more so at a preliminary injunction stage, that the real issue here is not a decision on the merits of whether or not the preliminary injunction would be justified. Judge Murphy said no. And I think that we will have the opportunity to provide more evidence for when this court may have the chance to see a full record for review about the relationship between that fee and the control of the secondary effects. In the testimony, the mayor did say that there was such information, but they couldn't find it. That was not directly contested as a matter of fact, so I think it was appropriate for Judge Murphy to rely on that.
To rely on what? That he couldn't find it?
No, to rely on his testimony that there were such studies that indicated of an increase in police activity as a result of these clubs. Now, in terms of the other issue that was raised on the denial of Mr. Joliner's license itself, Mr. Herman mentioned that briefly in answer to one of your questions. I think the record is abundantly clear that this was not an arbitrary refusal for Mr. Joliner's license. The transcript of the two meetings on April 15th and May 6th both indicated that the Board of Trustees, which are present here in the courtroom today, did not act arbitrarily. They denied his license denied consideration of his license the April 15th meeting on the grounds that they believed he was in arrears in his payments to the village for his license. at the May 6th meeting, it seems that they denied his license again, believing that he was in arrears, and also the issue of what his license really should have been and that he hadn't been paying for the appropriate license for the last several years. I believe, and I think that the village would certainly contend, that that's sufficient factual evidence to sustain Judge Murphy's conclusion that they did not act arbitrarily or capriciously. Even if they were wrong, and as it turned out, they may have been wrong, that is not an arbitrary and capricious basis for denying the license. So I think that claim should fail, and the refusal to award the preliminary injunction should stand. I think that concludes our argument.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your Honors, just to add to what Mr. Gilbert said, they also have a head tax. So not only do they charge a liquor tax and a general business license, they charge $2 for every patron, which, by the way, is not even in the ordinances. They just do it informally. In fact, that brings me to the argument that Mr. Gilbert made.
How do we determine how many patrons there are?
It's done on a voluntary basis, according to the mayor, Your Honor. So when they feel like paying it, they pay whatever they remember the number of patrons to be. It sounds unusual to me, but who am I to question that? Mr. Gilbert makes this a point about, well, they had a reason. They came up with a reason why Mr. Joelner was denied. Now, unfortunately, that reason was not justified by anything in any of their regulations. And that is entirely the problem. They cannot come up with reasons on the spur of the moment. It's post hoc rationalization. It is the danger in First Amendment areas of having no regulations where you can come up with any reason you want to at any time you want to, and that's what they've done here. The sufficient avenues, your own jurisprudence under South Suburban case talks about, or North Avenue, the North Avenue line of cases, talks about what sufficient avenues for alternative means of expression is a market theory. If there are more applicants than there are places to conduct your business, then there's not sufficient alternative avenues. And it's clear there are more applicants than the licenses they allow. So they've been denied, on the face of it, from alternative means of expression. What I don't understand about this case is how the village continually, over and over again, says that the purpose of this ordinance is not to limit the licenses, when it in fact says so in the very first sentence of its ordinance. It says the purpose of this ordinance is to limit the number of licenses. It doesn't say the purpose is to address secondary effects. It doesn't say the purpose is to address crime. It says, sentence number one, the purpose of this ordinance is to limit the number of adult business licenses in this city. There's no way around that. This question about studies, it's clear under South Suburban Housing, the city has the burden of justifying the license fee that it imposes. It has to be revenue neutral, and the burden remains with the city to justify how they calculated it and the fact that it is not revenue enhancing. And in this case, there is testimony by the mayor and the city clerk that this was intended to be a general revenue tax, and that revenue goes into the general city coffers and goes to help pay for streets and sidewalk improvements and building improvements, public works improvements, as well as police. There's never been any testimony as to what it costs. There's never been any testimony that any of these clubs cause an increase in the amount of police calls, and or if so, what that costs. And this specious idea that somehow they've got a study, but they weren't able to produce it. Even if they did it, but it's clear they did not conduct the study. They're relying on somebody else's study, and they're relying on Alameda, which the Supreme Court said, for the purpose of imposing regulations, you may rely on a study conducted in another place. Now, they want to take that one further and say, well, we're going to rely on studies showing there are costs made somewhere else in the country to, in order to justify the fee we impose. Alameda did not go that far, and in fact, under the jurisprudence of the Seventh Circuit, does not and should not go that far. Unless you have,
with Judge Bowdy's permission.
Go ahead.
You're allowed to stay open under Judge Murphy's decree for what period of time?
The current state of Mr. Joelner's business, I assume you're talking about the applicant, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, right.
Current state of Mr. Joelner's business is a bookstore, book and video store. He applied, been doing live entertainment on a sporadic basis. The ordinance recently changed to differentiate bookstores from live entertainment, and that was what prompted this. He went to the city and said, I want my live entertainment license, and while you're at it, I'm going to open another place down the block here because that's where all of those places are congregating, and that's what led to all of this. So the district court only allowed us to retain the small bookstore video store and refused him the right to conduct any further live entertainment, and also refused him the right to go forward with the contract that he's paid for. He's sitting on this land and on two other locations waiting for the go-ahead, costing him money. And every day, as this court knows, every day that First Amendment rights are violated is a violation, an important violation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. We'll take the case under advisement. Thank you, counsel, as well.